The sun was setting as I stopped digging to wipe the sweat from my brow. The gross feeling of wet, gritty mud being smeared across my forehead was a reminder of the occupational grodiness of being on an archaeological dig. I had always loved dinosaurs as a kid, but after a few weeks out in the inferno of Utah's wilderness, I was beginning to think my grad program was not the best fit for me. I gripped my pickaxe and was about to try and get a little bit more dirt moved when I saw the silhouette of a person move down from a rocky outcropping quite a distance from where our dig was set up. I looked over my shoulder back towards the camp, and it looked like everyone was out starting a campfire, preparing dinner. And if my whole camp was there, who was crazy enough to be out running around in the desert? I looked back out towards the outcropping and I realized that whomever was crazy enough to be out there in the desert was also very fast. The distance to me and the dig site was rapidly closing. "Hey, what are you doing out there?" I shouted. No reply, but as they got closer and closer, I could see they had long stringy hair and they were taking huge strides. The figure looked like a man, and as he approached, it was clear he wasn't wearing a shirt or any clothing, really. I grabbed my pickaxe and shouted again, but the naked guy kept running at me, and as he got close, I could hear him growling. I saw him open his mouth and could see huge shark-like teeth, and he screamed and leapt at me, and I swung the pickaxe as hard as I could, and I saw the blade hit the guy square in the chest. He landed on his side. And when I realized I had probably impaled the guy, I began to run over to him. But he was suddenly on his feet with no visible wound, and he jumped at me again, pinning me down to the ground. I held up the handle of the axe just as he lunged his head forward and he bit into the wood hard, and I could hear the axe splinter and give way to his powerful jaws. I struggled to get out from under him, but the monster was too strong, and as he bit down into my shoulder, I managed to scream, "My name is Rick Kitagawa." And this is the Inner Monster Podcast. In the Southern Ute culture of native people of the Great Basin region of the United States, there is a race of cannibalistic monsters known as the Siats. These creatures were known to kidnap children for their meals, and apparently the female Siats, known as Bapets, were even more malevolent. And while these creatures mainly played a role in scaring children into compliance like a bogey, these cannibals inspired the name for the genus of a single species dinosaur known as Siats microrum, a theropod found in 2013 that you can think of a mix between a velociraptor and a small baby tyrannosaurus, maybe. But going back to the mythical man-eaters, I couldn't find too much in terms of descriptions of these creatures, so most of the story description is all from my head. But one interesting point is that they were said to be invincible. Well, invincible except for the one weakness, which is an obsidian arrowhead. And this is an assertion, but when I looked at the geographical range of the Southern Ute people, as well as the geographical range of where obsidian could be found, there is significant overlap. And that said, perhaps obsidian was just rarer than other stones, and so it was more akin to a silver bullet than, you know, just, I guess, a regular stone arrowhead. But all in all, for something to be quote-unquote invincible, but be easily killed by an arrow just sort of seems like a simple solution to what initially seems like a huge problem. And it is the sheer simplicity of this Siat slaying solution which brings me to today's topic, simplicity. And I think we often look at problems that we're facing and we invent stories that make the problem much more unwieldy and complex than we might imagine. We often think of the problem as unsolvable, too big, or too intertwined with other problems. But what if the solutions were much more simple than we might think? I've mentioned this before, but I remember having a conversation with Dean Correll, author of Mastering the Basics, and in my ignorance, asked him about what the next level is after you've mastered the basics around achieving business success. I naively assumed that there was some hidden jewel, some advanced tactics or strategies that was what you focused on after you had mastered the basics. But at the end of the day, Dean told me that the next level is where you've really mastered the basics to the point that you don't even need to think about them, and you're really just doing them seamlessly and able to apply them in various different contexts. And when you read his book, which I've linked in the show notes, you realize how simple so many of the basics are, yet we still don't do them and focus on shiny tactics and the latest growth hacking and all this other BS when we really should be focusing often on simple solutions. If you're not an entrepreneur, or even if you are, business might seem like some crazy complex thing, right? There's marketing and building a website and intellectual property laws and business plans and all of these other things that MBA programs will teach you. But at the end of the day, business is really incredibly simple. It's find a customer, earn their trust, and provide them more value than what they pay you for. And then you repeat that. It is a deceptively simple concept, yet we often feel like this is so hard to do. And really, it's the same skill as finding a job. Find a company, earn their trust, and provide them more value than what they pay you for. It is not a terribly complex problem. And I'm not saying it's easy, especially given that a majority of businesses close down in 2 years, and sometimes it can feel like really hard to find a new job, but it is not necessarily complex. And a quick detour back to the part about providing more value than you're compensated for. This might sound weird that you're leaving money on the table, but this is how all sustainable business works. If you create something that I can only sell for $50 and I pay you $50, I go out of business. By necessity, as a freelancer, consultant, or employee, you have to get paid less than the full value of the work that you're producing for the company in order for that company to stay afloat, in order for you to stay afloat as a repeat service provider. So, well then, why do you work for someone? Well, that's a great question, and we could dive into the systems of capitalism, money, and value, but in short, you leave value on the table so whomever is paying you can survive, and like I said, pay you again later. You are leveraging other resources, like benefits, stable paychecks, departments, and coworkers who have things outside of your skill set, in order to create more value overall. Especially in case of complex products that require multiple skill sets, you might do marketing for a car company because while you might have the means to sell cars, you might not have the means to source materials, build a factory, hire workers, engineer working components, and assemble the cars all on your own. And if you do, whether that's the money to pay for all of these resources and outsource, i.e. hire others to help you, or the skill set and resources to do them all yourself, well, then you can start your own car company. So, going back to simplicity, how can we simplify the problems in our lives? If we focus on ratcheting back the problems, we might be able to find simpler solutions that are much more easily implemented than complex ones. An obvious, but sometimes seemingly overwhelming task is to break down the problem into the component parts. Finding a new job might seem like a heavy lift, but breaking it down into researching companies you'd want to work for, doing informational interviews at said company, drafting a cover letter, editing your resume so it fits for the role, researching the interviewer, etc., is a lot more manageable. But even more important, in my mind, than breaking down the problem into component parts is getting real with yourself about solving the actual problem. I see this a lot in solopreneurs and freelancers, and this also includes myself, but so often the solution is incredibly simple, but we try and convince ourselves that we actually have a different problem. Often, going out and selling one's services or products is the easiest way to build a business. This could be emailing people about what's going on, or doing direct sales where you literally cold call slash visit slash email people with a pitch as to why they should be interested in your product. However, instead, we try to build up 10 underused and mediocre social media channels and spend hours creating landing pages and sales funnels for those that opt in to gifts and spend time fine-tuning branding colors and how our website looks. Or on the flip side, it might be that you're selling your pants off, but at the end of the day, your product just isn't that great. And I mean this from a market fit perspective. I think most products are for someone, they just might not be for enough people. Or maybe it's just a shift you need on how you're selling or who you're selling to. And I guess at the end of the day, it could also be that your product just isn't that great. But either way, whatever your issue is, we need to remember that often the problem can and should be boiled down to its essential nature. Is the problem really the logo on your website? Or is it that you're not selling to people? Is the problem what font you're using on your resume? Or is it the fact that you're not networking with people at the company you want to work for? Is the problem really your packaging? Or is it that no one knows about your product? Is the issue really about when you should be holding your agile stand-ups? Or is it that you need to invest more in being a better leader? Unfortunately, as I well know, getting to the simple problem that unlocks most other things isn't usually fun, interesting, or sexy. It's often acknowledging the biggest fear that holds most of us back, which is around our ideas about our own self-worth. After all, why else aren't we cold calling businesses or reaching out for that coffee chat or taking feedback on how to lead effective meetings? Most of the hesitancy here comes from that fear of rejection, which we then use to tell ourselves stories about our self-worth. At the end of the day, it's a lack of trust in ourselves, which is a simple problem, but can be really scary to face head on. In my other podcast, which I'll link in the show notes, I recently interviewed Jordan Benjamin, a superstar salesperson, and because sales is something that I struggle with, I asked him how he maintains his mental game when salespeople have to often go through a lot of no's to get to yeses. He offered a great solution around keeping a file of compliments and praise that you go and refer to whenever you're feeling down or unsure of yourself, or if you make a mistake and are the type to beat yourself up for it. And let me tell you, this totally works. I recently made a very public entire workshop affecting mistake in an Akimbo workshop I'm head coaching, and this is a place I'm usually extremely confident in, but afterwards, when I realized the mistake, I felt super down, super terrible, and massive imposter syndrome started to set in. But fortunately, the instructor of the course had previously sent me a video thank you, which I watched and totally helped me shift out of the funk and build up the resilience for me to do what I felt was the right thing, which was to write personal apologies to everyone affected by my mistake. And you might not have videos of people saying nice things to you. This was my first one, but one, perhaps you could start sending nice videos to other people, since if more people do this often, more people have this wonderful gift. And two, even writing down things in a note-taking app and just reviewing them is incredibly powerful. The praise file is a simple solution to help break apart the fear, doubt, and negative self-talk that pops up whenever we're asking for the enrollment of others. The other simple solution to this would be to stop trying new things, to stop chasing your dreams, to stop trying. But if you were that person, you wouldn't be listening to this podcast right now, would you? Simple solutions are not hard to find or come up with. It's really about looking at your problem and having the honesty and self-awareness to really get clear about what your problem is. And if you don't have that self-awareness, having the resilience and courage to go out and ask other people what they think. So what hurdle or challenge might you be facing that could be solved with a simple solution? What do you need to lean into that solution and actually use it? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a monstrous day.